virtual couch.
Let's get cozy and comfortable and get ready to hear some enlightening, empowering, and inspiring talk on the virtual couch for Leticia on Leticia's virtual couch.
Virtual couch.
Hey, girl.
Let's go.
Hello, and welcome to Leticia's virtual couch. Happy July to you, and also happy National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. I know that's a lot, right? So I got it out. I would like to take the time this month of July to shed a little light to erase the stigma of mental health in the Black community. And yes, this month highlights all minorities. And of course, they deserve the same amount of recognition, but I choose to focus on the Black community because I am a Black woman. So after this break, I am going to come back with some stats and other facts to help erase the stigma in the Black community. So please stay tuned. The discussions on this podcast is for informational purposes only. If you find yourself becoming triggered by any topic, please refrain from listening and reach out to your nearest emergency room or dial 911. If you desire to seek therapy in the future, please Google and find your nearest therapist in close proximity to you. Thank you. Talk about some of these phenomenal accolades that B.B. Moore Campbell received. In 2003, she received the Outstanding Media Award for Literature. Campbell advocated for mental health education and support among individuals of diverse communities. That's what she was all about. In 2005, inspired by Campbell's charge to end stigma and provide mental health information, longtime friend Linda Wharton Boyd suggested dedicating a month to the effort. Now, the duo got to work outlining the concept of National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month and what it would entail. With the support of DC Department of Mental Health and then Mayor Anthony Williams, they held a news conference in Southeast DC where they encouraged DC residents to receive mental health checkups. That's awesome. Campbell and Wharton Boyd held book signings, spoke in churches, and created a National Minority Mental Health Task Force of friends and allies. Sadly, the momentum halted when Campbell became too ill to continue. Wharton Boyd, friends, family, and allies, advocates, continue carrying the torch in honor of Campbell, researched and obtained the support of Representatives Albert Nguyen of Maryland, Diane Watson of California, who co-signed legislation to create an official Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. I want to take another brief break because I want to spend some time when I come back to kind of go into why this mission was so dear to her heart. She has some personal reasons why she took on this crusade. And I'm not going to say that's the only reason, but you know, with anything in life, usually we find our passion in things that directly affect us. Like even in our field, you have a lot of people who are therapists who become doctors because they just have that instinct within themselves to help people. And usually it's those people who have been on the other end who needed to receive help and now want to give back, or those individuals who saw there was a void there who want to bridge the gaps that they learn that are there now, that from their own pain and their own shortcomings of not receiving the adequate care and support that they so needed. So I don't know what her story was in that. I know she has a personal story of someone very close and dear to her who have suffered mental health issues. But I don't know if there was anything even personal, or it could have just been that she cared for her community as well. So with that said, please stay tuned for more. Hey, this is your girl, Letitia, coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this, even as a therapist myself, if a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and, yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. Psychologytoday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time, because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right? And search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
Did you enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch and get ready to hear our girl Letitia drop some more gems on ya.
Mental health conditions do not discriminate based on race, color, gender, or identity. Anyone can experience the challenges of mental illness regardless of their background. However, background and identity can make access to mental health treatment much more difficult. B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month was established in 2008, 2 years after her untimely death from cancer. B.B. Moore Campbell, prolific writer, historian, rhythmic storyteller, and advocate for equitable mental health treatment and services, made great strides in bringing awareness to mental health issues in minority communities. Now, according to NAMI.org, In May of 2008, the U.S. House of Representatives announced July as B.B. Moore Campbell's National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. The resolution was sponsored by Representative Albert Wynn of Maryland and co-sponsored by a large bipartisan group to achieve two goals. The first of these goals were to improve access to mental health treatment and services and promote public awareness of mental illness. The second of these goals is to enhance public awareness of mental illness and mental illness among minorities. So basically public awareness as a whole, but specifically mental illness among minority populations. B.B. Moore Campbell was an author and advocate and co-founder of NAMI Urban Los Angeles. And many of you Los Angeles residents like myself, you probably have seen the signs in L.A., and yes, B.B. Moore Campbell was the one who ushered that in. And she was also a national spokesperson, but she passed away in November of 2006. And that's really unfortunate. I want to come back after this break to let you know more about her achievements, because she's achieved so much towards mental health. And we really haven't heard a lot about that. And that's one of the main reasons why we need to spread light, especially in minority communities, because just like you probably haven't heard about her. This is the reason why she tried to do so much in form of policy and helping to bridge gaps and erase the stigma, because our communities, namely communities of color, are languishing behind in mental health treatment, not receiving the adequate treatment and just not having access, period. So after this break, I want to go in more detail about some of the accolades, because I definitely wish she would have gotten more of her flowers while she was living. She didn't. So I just want to take the time to use this episode to give her flowers now and to just bring more awareness, because that's what she was all about. She was all about erasing the stigma, bringing awareness so we can bridge the gaps in communities of color. Okay, so please stay tuned after this message.
So what is it that you want the world to know about Maia Campbell? Because there's a lot of information out there about you, mm-hmm. and people have a lot of perceptions about you. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you want the world to know about who you are and where you've been? What do you want the world to know?
That I'm a young, strong, gifted person that has overcome a great deal of struggle, that is working through an illness right now. I'm coping, and I'm giving a lot of my problems to God, and I'm giving a lot of my struggle and my glory to God, and I'm just saying that I can get through this one day at a time if I give my presence and my greatness up to God and just work my steps and try to work towards some goals that are the best things for me, and say no to drugs and stay away from some of the things that have torn me apart.
Say no to drugs.
Because that would be a no-no for me.
Yeah.
So.
What do you want me to know as I move throughout this next couple of days with you and your family? What do you want me to know in order to help you better?
That you've been a very big help for me. I owe you a lot of thanks, because without you, I couldn't. You've given me a platform to present my issue, and I want to turn it around through you. And I think that you can help me really lift up my issue and turn it around, because people don't see me the way they need to see me until you give them a chance to see the whole picture. And I think we've given them a chance to see the whole picture through you.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you may not be aware, but Bibi Moore Campbell was the mother of the beautiful Maia Campbell from the 90s sitcom In the House with LL Cool J and Debbie Allen. I used to love that show in the 90s. She was the daughter Tiffany in that sitcom. Now, in recent years, unfortunately, we have seen Maia sort of being exploited. And I'm not going to say sort of. She's been outright exploited in her drug-induced states and most likely her manic state, which is one of the states in bipolar disorder. She was also on Iyanla Fix My Life, which was the clip you just listened to after the break. And she was on there with her daughter to repair their relationship. I have a clip of that actual segment. Listen in right here. Children suffer tremendously when their parents are dealing with mental illness. And in Maia's case, a co-occurring disorder, which we clinicians and therapists also label as dually diagnosed. There are numerous community resources, but sadly, a lot of these resources just aren't utilized until there is a problem and the Department of Children and Family Services, or CPS, are alerted and notified to intervene due to abuse and neglect, which children are more vulnerable due to their parents' mental health condition. According to the National Library of Medicine, found on PubMed.gov, worldwide, 15 to 23% of children live with a parent with a mental illness. These children have up to 50% chance of developing a mental illness themselves. Parental anxiety disorder sets children at a more specific risk for developing anxiety disorder themselves, where children of parents with other mental illnesses are at a high risk of a large variety of mental illnesses. And although preventative interventions and measures in children of mentally ill parents may decrease the risk of problem development by 40%, currently, these children are not automatically identified and offer help. Other research have shown coping and support mechanisms employed to the parent and children produce great outcomes for both, namely the children. So with that said, it would be advantageous to identify these children early, because the later we identify them, the worse the outcome, right? So Bibi Moore Campbell, she wrote several books throughout her lifetime, two of which centered around mental health, mental illness, and inspired closely by her, I guess, her close proximity to the problem. So the books that she wrote, they were inspired by things that she was going through herself in her own family. Now, the book 72 Hour Hold was written, and it is fiction, I will say, but it was loosely based on her own daughter's story, Maia. Sometimes My Mommy Get Angry, that was another book that she wrote as well, I believe was also inspired by her interactions with Maia and her observation of Maia's interactions with her daughter. I am going to insert a clip of Maia's daughter. I think her first name is Elizabeth, if I'm not mistaken. But her daughter was also on Iyanla Fix My Life with Maia. So I want you to listen to the clip right here, and I'll return with more after.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Go say hi to mama.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
You look nice.
Thanks.
Give me a hug.
In 2000, Maia gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, Elizabeth Elisha. But a year after she was born, Maia says she stopped taking the medication for bipolar disorder and lost custody. Elisha is now 12 years old, and she lives with her father. Maia hopes to one day regain custody of her daughter, but first, She has to work on mending their broken relationship.
Are you nervous?
A little.
Don't be nervous. Come close to mommy. What would you like to share with your mom?
On all my hands.
That I miss you and that I wish I was with you like more often.
Me too.
What do you know about where your mom is right now and what's going on for her right now? What do you know about that?
That she's trying to get better.
Better? Why?
Because she wants to get well and to be with me and to keep going with life.
Okay. Now, what do you understand about why your mom wasn't there for you?
Well, I understand that she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do.
Okay. What do you want her to know about where you are in life right now?
I want you to know that I do love you and that none of this is your fault and that you're the reason I'm trying to get better.
So you know that her not being with you isn't her choice, because I can imagine you want your mom there like everybody else. And sometimes your mom hasn't been there, yeah? And I can imagine that that makes you sad sometimes. Yeah, and when you get sad about that, is there, who do you talk to about it?
I mean, I really don't talk to anybody about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want her to know?
Just that I'll always be here for you, no matter what. Even if I'm sick, no matter where I am, I'm always a phone call away. In some way or another, I'll always be here for you. If you have resentment towards me when you get older, I want you to know that we can work through it and we can always talk about it and I'll always be here for you.
I don't care about the resentment when you get older. I care about the sadness now. I also want you to know that it's really natural to sometimes have sadness or anger or upset because your mom is different from everybody else's mom. That's natural. If that happens to you, then I would say talk about it. Mm-hmm. Talk about it. If you can't talk about it to her, if you don't have anybody to talk about it, write it out in your journal. Don't let it fester. Don't let it grow. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
You hear what she's saying? Yeah.
What else?
I just want you to get healthier so we can be together more and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
And that it comes really fast and sooner. And that I'll always love you.
I always love you too.
Oh my God. Come here, let me kiss you. Look. See, I just gonna hug you up in the bosom. Rock you, rock you, rock you, rock.
I know I stated that one of B.B. Moore Campbell's books was named 72 Hour Hold. For those of you who don't know, 72 hours is the minimum amount of days, or time, I should say, because it's 72 hours is 3 days, basically. One can be admitted for psychiatric hospitalization on an involuntary basis due to danger to self or others. In California, you probably have heard 5150, right? And that's the number of the section of welfare and institution code. So you may hear someone saying, oh, that person is 5150, even though I don't like that at all, because, you know, making fun of mental illness is just not funny at all. It really isn't. So basically, this just allows a person with a mental health challenge to be involuntarily detained for 72 hours. Okay, a person on a 5150 can be held in the psychiatric hospital against their will for, again, up to 72 hours. More days can be added after a judge ruled that an individual may need more time. But of course, that has to legally be determined. Okay. And so what happens a lot of the times, you can have these hearings inside of the hospital so the individual doesn't have to leave the facility, okay? And I've been in some of those hearings, and so we will call that a 5250. So basically, if after a 72-hour hold, an individual was deemed to still be a danger to self or others, or gravely disabled, and gravely disabled is basically an individual who is unable to care for themselves. It can even be someone who is older, you know, the elderly, if they're not able to, what we call, take care of the ADLs, their daily living, basically their, you know, washing themselves, you know, combing their hair, you know, properly grooming. Yeah, if they can't do any of those things, then they will probably be deemed gravely disabled. And that's under the WIC code 5250, which again permits an individual to be involuntarily held in a locked psychiatric hospital / facility for another 14 days. And again, like I said before, court hearings are often held in the hospital. Now in Las Vegas, where I'm also licensed, Nevada, basically, 72-hour holds are called legal 2000s or L2Ks, okay? So when I return from the break, I wanna get into some more stats to gain a greater perspective of mental illness in the African-American community. I want to educate you a little bit more on that and just want to dig a little bit deeper so, you know, we can erase the stigma. You remember I told you before, that's the whole reason why I started this podcast. I wanted to erase the stigma, and in this case, I want to commemorate the National Mental Health National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And so after the break, I want to get in some more stats that are pertaining specifically to the African-American community. Okay, so I will be back after this break. The discussions on this podcast is for informational purposes only. If you find yourself becoming triggered by any topic, please refrain from listening and reach out to your nearest emergency room or dial 911. If you desire to seek therapy in the future, please Google and find your nearest therapist in close proximity to you. Thank you. If you or someone you love is having thoughts of suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. It is available 24 hours, 7 days a week. You are not alone. This is your girl, Letitia, coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this even as a therapist myself. If a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries.
And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. Psychologytoday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right? And search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch. And get ready to hear our girl, Letitia, drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on them, Letitia.
Letitia, drop some more gems on them.
I wanted to briefly go over what ADLs are as well. I know before the break I spoke on gravely disabled. And so you may hear of that a lot. This is when an individual basically is not really having a mental health issue, but they're not able to care for their activities for daily living. And that's what ADL stands for. And so included in that are 6 activities generally recognized as essential to independent living. One of those things is bathing, the ability to clean oneself, perform grooming activities like shaving, brushing teeth. Okay. Dressing, the ability to get dressed by oneself without struggling with buttons and zippers. Eating, the ability to feed oneself. That's self-explanatory. Transferring, being able to either walk or move oneself from a bed to a wheelchair and back again. And the last of these 6 things is toileting, the ability to get on and off of the toilet. And so continence, the ability to control one's bladder, bowel movements, and so I wanted to just add that so you can be a little bit clear on what ADLs actually is. Okay, so I wanted to get into some stats. According to the Health and Human Services Office of Minority Health, Black adults in the U.S. are more likely than white adults to report persistent symptoms of emotional distress, such as sadness, hopelessness, and feeling like everything is an effort. Black adults living below the poverty line are more than twice as likely to report serious psychological distress than those with more financial security. Despite the needs, only 1 in 3 Black adults who need mental health care receive it. According to the American Psychiatric Association's Mental Health Facts for African Americans guide, they are also less likely to receive guideline consistent care, less frequently included in research, more likely to use emergency rooms or primary care rather than mental health specialists. I want to go further and give you some more stats regarding African American as the group relates to mental health and mental illness, okay? And again, I don't like to leave other groups out. I don't want any other person that is listening to this podcast feel like, oh my God, she's only talking about African Americans. She's only talking about Black Americans. However, you know, that is the case because I am Black myself. So I use my platform to highlight the community that I belong to. Now, this is not to say that other groups, again, and as I stated before, are not valuable. That is not the case. However, you know, you may use your platform to, you know, to highlight other groups, and that is totally fine. I choose to use my platform to highlight what's going on in the African-American Black community. Okay, so with that said, I'm going to continue with some more stats. In 2018, 11.5% of Black adults in the U.S. had no form of health care. The Black community, like other communities of color, are more likely to experience socioeconomic disparities such as exclusion from health, education, social, and economic resources. These disparities may contribute to worse mental health outcomes, hence more of a stigma. One study showed that 63% of Black people believe that a mental health condition is a sign of personal weakness. Now, I know we've probably have all heard that. I don't have a problem. I'm not weak. I don't need to talk to anyone. We have all heard that from someone in the Black community, right? I know I have. And that is just not true. You're not weak. If anything, you're more strong because you saw that you have a need and you made the necessary steps to address that need. As a result, people may experience shame about having a mental illness and worry that they may be discriminated against due to their condition, which I'm not gonna lie, it can happen because I will say in recent years, I have seen the stigma slowly dissipate, but we still have a lot of work to do. I would definitely say that. Even when Blacks have demonstrated bravery and courage to seek treatment, we have often been met with discriminatory, inequitable, and biased treatment. I'm gonna stick a pin in that and I'm gonna come back after the break because you know there has been a lot of history that we can point to of why there is such a stigma, okay? And I don't wanna spend a lot of time there, but we all know about the Tuskegee experiment and Henrietta Lacks and all of those unfortunate events in our history that we just can't erase and we just can't forget about, okay? So after the break, I wanna continue on this journey just to talk about some of the issues with mistrust and just come up with some solutions, you know, together so that we can continue to erase the stigma of mental health in the Black / African American community. Okay? So please stay tuned.
Have a seat on the virtual couch.
Get it, girl. Let's go.
It takes a great deal of courage to muster enough strength to finally seek help for a mental health condition, especially when there's a long-standing stigma and probably being the first one in the family lineage to do so. It's sad to accomplish this great feat only to be met with bias and prejudice. Well, this is the reality for many African Americans, and I intend to erase the stigma and encourage you to do the same. Now, I will say bias can be conscious or unconscious. The latter can be due to a lack of cultural competence, which can be mediated with proper and consistent lifelong training and education. The former can be from just outright racial prejudice, which is ignorant. And definitely it is. It's ignorant. This ultimately can lead to the mistrust that a lot of us see of mental health professionals and just create a barrier for many to seek treatment. Now, all it takes is one bad experience, as we know, just anything in life, right? For many of us to say, nope, I'm good. I'm not doing that because of X, Y, and Z. I have heard a friend that had this experience, or I myself have this certain experience. So I'm always advocating for people to attend therapy, to give it a try. And, you know, because I just feel like I'm on a therapy crusade to
have people give it a try, but I understand the difficulty in that because I'm competing with history of abuse that we have received as a people. Even on vacation, I went to Dominican Republic recently and I met a young lady who shared that she was in therapy before. And I know this meeting was very divine because we hit it off very, very fast. And she informed me that she really missed going to therapy, but her previous therapy continued to be booked with his celebrity clientele. And that's a whole nother story because I feel like even if you have a celebrity clientele, you know, that doesn't negate from the fact that you have other clients that you should be seeing. However, I don't want to judge this person because I don't know the whole story. I just know her half of the story, right? But I challenged her. I really did. And anyone knows me, know I'm not just going to have you tell me anything and not challenge you if it's kind of murky, I should say. I'm not going to challenge you for just anything. But I wanted to challenge her because, you know, being a mental health professional, I don't want another professional to be judged incorrectly from what I'm getting ready to tell you. So she went on and stated that she had another therapist who she met for the first time and they provided her, I guess, with an assessment. And she didn't like the questions, as I later found out, and she stopped. But prior to me, engaging her more and more in this conversation, she basically said, well, I didn't like her because of the questions she asked. She shouldn't have asked me those questions. So I educated her and explained to her, well, you know, what did you do? You know, did you tell her that you don't like those questions? But I also want to explain to her, as a therapist, we are not magicians. You know, we're not mind readers, so we can't know what's triggering you unless you speak up. And as a therapist, we have to do a thorough assessment, meaning we have to ask questions that may not apply to you, but we'll know later that they didn't apply to you because after the assessment, we're going to go over those questions. So in this meeting, I also empowered her to ask questions and basically empower her to interview the therapist in her future pursuits to make sure she finds the right and best fit like she would with a hairstylist, a medical doctor, you know, and things of that sort. What was good out of this, she was open to doing so and even owned the fact that she didn't give the therapist a chance. So I say all that to say we can't critique something accurately if we didn't do our part in due diligence. And at least she admitted that. And so as a therapist, you know, I wanted to kind of guide her, you know, even though I'm on vacation, it wasn't like anything strenuous for me to be able to do so because I feel like in my profession, I'm always advocating and trying to erase the stigma of mental health. And so all it takes is one bad experience and for her to perpetuate that and then other people not want to seek therapy. So I didn't want that to happen. Okay, so I just wanted to add that in there. But Black people may also be more likely to, I wanted to add this, maybe more likely to describe physical symptoms related to their mental health problems as well. And a lot of people don't know that. And so I wanted to just bring this up because it's part of the cultural competence. Many therapists who are not familiar with our culture may not understand that. And even people that are familiar with our culture may not understand that. So even more so for other people. So, for example, individuals who are experiencing mental health issues may describe bodily aches and pains when talking about depression. A healthcare provider who is not culturally competent may not recognize these as symptoms of a mental health condition. Additionally, Black men are more likely to receive a misdiagnosis of schizophrenia when expressing related symptoms to mood disorders or PTSD. So again, Black men may receive a misdiagnosis, and they often are, as stats and research show, when they are only probably going through a mood disorder or PTSD, which a lot of Black men go through because of trauma, especially community violence. We have a lot of men amongst us, Black men, who have witnessed community violence just in high numbers, you know, having friends and family members who they have not just heard about them passing, but have witnessed it firsthand and have almost been killed themselves. So we have a lot of that. And so you have a lot of men who may have symptoms where it may look like schizophrenia, where they're talking to themselves and things of that sort. And that's not to say that that's something that's not there, but we want to accurately assess and test for those things to not be misdiagnosed, which we are in high numbers. Now, after the break, I want to go over what you as lay persons, if you're not a professional, a mental health professional, what you as a common lay person can do to commemorate National Mental Health Awareness Month. What can you do? And again, I'm sorry, it's National Minority Mental Health Month. We actually do have a Mental Health Awareness Month, which is in May. But in July, we commemorate National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. So I just wanted to correct that as well. So after the break, we will be going over that. So please come back and I'll be speaking with you shortly. Stay tuned. Before the break, I gave you a little story about someone that I met while I was on vacation, right? But I did leave out one thing, and I wanted to educate you on this. It is very common to become triggered by questions during the assessment phase. And especially when you're coming to therapy for the first time and you are having to take off those band-aids that you are so used to covering up those wounds that need to be healed. And it is very common to have an urge to fight or flight in response to that. And that can be in the form of rebelling and running and saying, this doesn't work for me and she offended me. A lot of times with us, I will say, it comes in the form of offense. So if you're offended by something, and not to say that the situation is not offensive at all, I'm not saying that at all and trying to minimize your experience or negate it altogether. However, I will challenge you and encourage you to look in the mirror and see, was that thing an offense, really an offense, or did it trigger something that you haven't addressed yet? And a lot of times, I'm being honest with you as a therapist and just as a human, period, have I been offended by things that I just needed to address? Absolutely. But I acknowledge those things because I try to be really in tune with my body, what triggers me, what makes me upset and irritated, okay? So I just wanted to add that. And this is just part of being human because this is a part of what we call the sympathetic nervous system. And that's activated when we perceive dangerous situations, okay? The fight or flight instance kicks in right away, especially if you have endured trauma before, okay? So I want to go in now what we can all do to erase the stigma and commemorate National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, which is the month of July. So in closing, I want to talk about a few things, and you may want to add some things as well. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com if you have some ideas or things that you do yourself. I would love to hear about those things so I can incorporate them myself and share them with other people. And I may just add you to my podcast. So please, if you will, use my voice message system, yes, on the app, on the Anchor app, and you just may hear your lovely voice on an episode, okay? So the first thing I would say is to enhance awareness. If you are not a mental health professional, that is quite okay. You can still do things to commemorate this wonderful month, okay, to erase the stigma. I would suggest initiating discussions with your family and friends, even about your own mental health experience and therapy. I think coming from actual people outside of being professional to say your experience with therapy and how it's working for you, I think that is awesome and amazing. And it definitely encourages people to seek therapy. I have many clients that tell me they talk about me with their friends. It's so funny to me when they're coming in session and like, oh my God, I told them that's what my therapist said. And it's so refreshing to hear that they are having these real conversations, talking about therapy in just in a casual environment. I love it. You may also want to attend virtual and in-person seminars. You may also want to read books and listen to podcasts such as this one and many wonderful others, because there are so many other podcasts that my colleagues have as well that I listen to. And all of these are to increase your knowledge around mental health. Some of the things that you may not even know about, some things that you may have done and you thought that were correct and they're not. You know, podcasts are wonderful tools, wonderful mediums where you can learn a lot. And of course, books and TV shows and documentaries and things of that sort. To commemorate, you may want to join and donate to initiatives that highlight awareness to erase the stigma in the African-American community and just the Black, Indigenous, people of color communities, what we call BIPOC. You may want to do that as well. I also want to leave with this because even, you know, being that we are discussing mental health so readily and openly, we have a lot of people using their platforms in error. I would definitely say if you are not a mental health professional, in no way, form, or fashion should you be giving mental health advice. I've seen individuals on their platform giving advice and their intent may be okay. But it can do a lot of damage by telling an individual who may be going through an episode of depression that it's going to be okay, take a nap, is highly inappropriate because there's more entailed in our field than that. That person could be having an episode heading towards suicide, and that person needs to be directed to the nearest emergency room and a mental health professional so they can receive proper assessment, okay? So I wanted to leave with that. Thank you. And we just have a few more days in this month. I wanted to give this podcast, bring it to you at the end of the month. You know, I have other wonderful episodes that I have that I feel commemorates as well. But I wanted to just give you a little history, a little historical context of what National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month entails. Just erase the stigma, make it your own. And if you need to seek therapy, definitely do so. It's nothing wrong with that. You're not crazy. I don't like that word at all. But, you know, I think we're making great strides. And I congratulate you all for listening and sharing the word, sharing my podcast. And with that, I want to say God bless. And I will be talking to you from my comfy couch very soon. Thank you and take care.
Wasn't that show fire? I hope you enjoyed your time on the virtual couch with our girl Letitia on Letitia's virtual couch. You did that, Letitia.
Letitia's virtual couch.